This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Welcome back, everybody, to episode number 52 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
You know, guys, I was thinking about starting this episode by simply going, train, 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 train. There we go. But I didn't know which one of you would, like, I didn't know if you guys would participate or if you'd leave me high and dry. And I was like, this could be really awkward if I'm the only one going, train, train, train. Or it could be a really beautiful moment. I didn't know.
I think it was beautiful when it just happened.
See? Good to know. Good to know. We're going to start things off with our Woman of Excellence. We received a nomination in the mail from a young man named Martin, and Martin said, "Hey, Girlfriend Bracket, I wanted to write in to nominate Ruth Woodrow for your Woman of Excellence segment." He says Ruth is a level one judge in the Edinburgh area who, along with her partner Neil, helps to keep the local tournament scene interesting and varied. I met Ruth at Con's Game Day, my first tournament ever coming back to Magic as an adult. She was a fun and enthusiastic opponent, even when I beat her with my Yankee starter deck version of Abzan. I think we've all been there. Ruth then invited me to join her weekly drafts, which she and her partner were hosting at a pub, and I got the opportunity to meet a lot of great people and experience older sets like Lorwyn and Mirrodin in their flashback draft events. At the time, we only had one local game store supporting Magic, and the environment there could sometimes be aggressive and unpleasant. Without Ruth giving me an opportunity to see a different side of the Magic community, I doubt I would have kept playing the game. I recently scored my first top 8 at a local PPTQ with Ruth and Neil there cheering me on. I wanted to acknowledge how important Ruth has been to making the Edinburgh Magic scene a vibrant and enjoyable environment, both through her work as a TO and a judge, and also as a patron of newer local gaming stores, which provide a friendly and welcoming space for new players. Awesome.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Keep up the good work, Ruth. And yeah. Magic at a pub. That sounds like fun. Although I tend to be kind of a sloppy drunk, so I wouldn't want to play Magic in a bar. But... Or maybe you would want to play with me because I would be sloppy. But... our first topic this week, some events happened this past weekend. I don't think we played at all, did we?
Mm-mm. Nope.
We all took the weekend off. Yeah, it felt pretty good. But other people were playing. We'll start off with SCG Indianapolis. This was one of the last standard events prior to rotation. Four Color Rally did really well, as expected. There was also a lot of this Four Color Company, which looks a lot like a Four Color Rally deck, except it doesn't run... Actually, it's closer to Bant Company, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. Bant Coco, but it has a Mantis Rider and a Dragon Master Outcast. And it runs no Rally of the Ancestors. It has 3 Jamokas Command, 2 Ojutai's Command, 4 Collected Company. Hallie, you were sort of our Bant Coco player. You know, when you hear about them adding red, do you think that that's a good move, or do you think this is just sort of the end of standard, so we're trying everything?
I mean, it seems like the latter. I know my experience with Bant Company was that hitting your land drops was always really important, and the deck was very mana hungry, so I would be a little wary of adding extra colors to the deck. But hey, if it's the last weekend of standard, you know, do whatever you want, do the thing.
That has kind of become our motto lately. Just do the thing.
Do the thing. Do the thing.
Do the thing. I don't know what the thing is, but you're doing it, so that's up to you. There was also a deck called Mono Red Eldrazi, which popped up. I've also seen a Mono Blue version as well. They're very aggressive Eldrazi lists. This one is running Roast, Hedron Crawler, Reality Smasher, Thopter Engineer, Vile Aggregate, Mom and Pop Nalar, For Chandra. And this one looks like fun. Did you guys see this?
I have seen this, yeah. Chris Van Meter, who has been playing in Seattle for the last several months, took this to an FNM at one of our local stores and has been a really big proponent of the deck recently, so I've been, you know, hearing a lot about it through talking to him and just seeing it on his social media, and it seems like it's, you know, potentially a little bit weak to Rally, but a pretty strong deck to play right now. I mean, Chandra's really great, and a lot of the time you can kind of ignore what your dirtily mid-range opponents are doing and just smash them with Reality Smashers.
How good does it feel to say that Chandra is great right now?
Very good.
Real good.
Pretty good.
We haven't been able to say that since, what, I think the Magic 2015 2014 version wasn't bad. Or was it 2015? But they were all kind of like middle of the road. And by all accounts, this one's quite good. So I'm happy to hear that. There was also a modern classic event, which was won by Bogles.
Oh, God.
Oh, great.
Well, I mean, modern is in a really weird place right now. And I think Bogles is kind of like Soul Sisters, where we were talking about how when shit's bad, play Soul Sisters. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the same way with Bogles, where like when shit's bad, just, you know, sleeve up some Bogles, throw some ethereal armors on it and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. That's so unfortunate. That changes.
Did you see that enchantment they spoiled today of like infusion of Saint Traft or something?
Yes, I did. Yep.
I mean, you could put that on a glistener elf and have fun.
Or we could not pretend like we never did that.
I'm sorry, I meant a glade cover scout. Isn't that what they run?
They're all the same.
Miserable. Katie's like, next topic, please. There was also another standard event, Grand Prix Paris took place. I just want to talk about the young man who won, Peter Shachurek. If you look at his picture in the header, like the slider, he has the sassiest face ever, and I love it. Like, he's looking at you with this little pout, like, yeah, it's my trophy. What? And just adorable. I love everything about that picture. So this was also a standard event. Top eight included Grixis Control, Dark Jeskai, Bant Company, Abzan, Esper Dragons, Four Color Rally, Blue Abzan, Green Mardu. And then they asked several of the pros questions, like they do. Coverage was really on point for this event. And so I'm going to go ahead and ask you guys these questions. What rotating card are you going to miss the most?
I'm gonna say my G Pearlake Ancient, because
really,
yeah, because he was always awesome, like if you were playing like a control deck, because you just would like dirtle drop like a Pearlake Ancient because it has flash, and then just what are they gonna do about it?
I wish that card saw more play.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't see as much play as I was hoping for, because it is cool and it is really annoying to face, but I wonder why it just never really took off or why it never stayed.
I think I'm gonna miss Dig Through Time. I know a lot of people won't, but I don't know. I still haven't seen any very like impressive draw spells, and I mean, Dig Through Time, you get to look at them, you get to pick them, you get to delve them, you get to cast them. It's just it's a good card.
You don't like Painful Truths?
It's okay, but you don't get the option, you know, to look at things and then pick what you want, you know what I mean? You just get what you get, and you don't throw a fit. And you have to pay life to do it. So, yeah, I'm going to miss Dig.
I'm a little unsure about this one, because when I think about cards that rotated, I think both about cards that I really enjoyed playing and cards that I didn't get to play because they never quite made the cut. So, in the latter camp, I have Savage Knuckleblade. Mm. Pour one out for Big Nux, because that card was so sweet, and Teemer was kind of a thing at a couple points in the format, but it was never quite there, so I'm gonna really miss, you know, having the chance to, you know, brew with that card, because it was pretty sweet. It seemed really good against Control, but I never really got to play it. In terms of cards that I played, there were actually a lot of cards from cons that I really enjoyed playing. My favorite was probably Mantis Rider, just because I love those tempo cards that can, you know, those little creatures that can make a really big impact on the game. And Mantis Rider was definitely that. I never really got to play with Lightning Angel, but I always wanted to. And Mantis Rider just fulfilled so many different things that I want. So I'm going to miss it a lot.
I do miss Dig Through Time. I'm going to miss Dig Through Time, like Katie said, quite a bit. Although I do like Painful Truth, so I do feel like I am... What is that saying when someone's getting married, where they say I'm losing a brother but gaining a... You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can't think of the phrase, but it's like you... That thing. That's how I feel about the draw cards. I'm probably going to miss Sidisi the most. Some of the best times I had playing in this standard was with Sidisi Whip. Being able to whip back Hornet Queen and make a bunch of bees was always really fun. You know, being able to whip Eidolon of Blossoms and doing the black-green constellation thing was great. I'm also going to miss Villainous Wealth. I had a lot of fun playing that when Dictate of Karametra was a thing, and that was just something that I hoped would be... I was hoping that Sultai Midrange or Sultai Control would take off once the Pharaoh just rotated, and it just never did. I thought it would be like a cool finisher for something, and when I did play that deck, it was just so much fun. And so I'm very sad to see those cards go. You know, one that saw a ton of play and then didn't, and then one that never really did. I wish it had more of an opportunity to shine.
Mm-hmm.
What rotating card are you going to miss the least?
Siege Rhino.
Yeah.
Siege Rhino.
Yep.
Yeah. But you used Siege Rhino, Hallie. It gave you some success.
I know, but begrudgingly. I mean,
if you can't beat him, join him.
Right, exactly. I definitely have a can't beat him, join him attitude about a lot of Magic cards. I mean, look, I played Thragtusk for most of the time that it was in Standard, and mm-hmm. Siege Rhino was kind of the same thing. So, I mean, I do like creatures with ETB effects, but Siege Rhino is just kind of in a class by himself, so... I don't know. It was just so much value in one creature, and sometimes you really enjoy getting that much value, but when the other player is getting that much value at your expense, it really stings a lot.
Yeah, and he was such like a format-defining card. I mean, Abzan stuck around through this entire rotation, and it just... I feel like it was just a little stale. Like, I feel like he was so good that it just, you know... If you weren't playing him... Maybe you were trying to play something to beat him, but besides this rally, you know, the rally deck that's been doing well as of recently, it was just a top contender all the time. Like, there wasn't a lot of give in what decks were doing, like, consistently well. Like, most of them just had Siege Rhino.
Chris, do you agree?
Oh, yeah, totally. I hate all the rhinos. Like, I'm not down with it. Because I was like, which one do I dislike more? Do I dislike Siege Rhino more, or do I dislike Tastiger more? But I realize I'm not really scared of Tastiger. And plus, people will still play Tastiger in Modern, so it's like, oh, cool, you have a Tastiger. That's cool. So, yeah.
Yeah. Siege Rhino was definitely one of those cards, you know, I treated it a lot like a burn spell, where it's like... If you're at 3 life, like if I'm at 3 life, I would oftentimes say, you can just show me the rhino. Like, we don't have to do this, you know? and there were times, and it felt like they always had the rhino. Mm-hmm. Like, I would start my turn, and before, I'm like, I'm not going to play a land. Like, I can just save time, and they usually had the rhino. And I'm actually going to be different. I'm going to be glad the fetch lands are gone.
Mm.
You know, I'm somebody who, I like themes. I like concepts. Like, I like being able to look at a deck and see a Storm deck and say, this is a Storm deck. See an Ad Nauseam deck. See an Affinity deck. See a Sidisi Whip deck and say, oh, this is a Sidisi Whip deck. I feel like for the last 6 months or so, it's just been all the good stuff. It's Mardu Green. All these drag queen kind of names. Like, Jeskai Black, Mardu Green, which... Come on, they make great drag names. You know, there's really no point to them. It's just, we're going to shove all these cards in there. You're seeing the same cards in all of them. Siege Rhino's in Mardu Green. It's in Jeskai Black. So it was in Jeskai... No.
No.
No, it was in Abzan... Blue Abzan.
Abzan Blue.
Right. And so, you know, you're just seeing these same cards get shoved in over and over again, and you're not really seeing a cohesive theme. And so that's what I really want. From looking at the Shadows Over Innistrad spoilers, I can see that they're pushing Black-Red Vampires really hard. I can see that they're doing things with Investigate. I can see concepts there, and that's what I'm really excited about, and I feel like we've been missing that for so long. Not to mention that it does make the games take a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I'm happy that we'll be able to hopefully have some more reasonable times. You know, Hallie, I think you mentioned that you experienced some draws.
Oh yeah, because mostly because of Fetchlands.
Yeah, yeah. So I think losing the Fetchlands will not only make the decks more interesting, but I think it'll also cut down on downtime. So. Yeah.
And it should make the format more affordable, mm-hmm. because the need to have all these fetch lands and to have these multicolor mana bases was what made Standard so expensive this season. And I'm hoping that as the prices sort of decrease, we'll see more people getting into Standard with Shadows now.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last question I'm going to ask you is, which current Standard decks will best survive rotation?
I'm going to say probably Ramp.
Ramp.
Yeah, so many of the pieces are still going to be around. I mean, you lose Ugin, which is unfortunate. It was a big win condition. But it seems like a lot of the decks are leaning on, like, looping Worldbreakers now. So that should still be around. You still have Shrine, you still have Sanctum, so the mana base is pretty much still there. You still have a lot of the same ramp spells. You have your Explosive Veggies, you have, I think Nissa's Pilgrimage is Nissa's Pilgrimage still going to be around, or is that rotating out?
It was an origin, so it stays.
Gotcha. Okay. So most of the mana base is still there. Most of the pieces for the deck are still there. So I think that's gonna have staying power, or at least a lot more staying power than a lot of these multicolor mid-range decks that won't function without their fetch lands.
I guess Hallie's answer is logical, but what I hope to see staying around is, I really like the Grixis control deck from Paris, and I hope that something like it survives, because, I mean, they're pushing, like, black-red, and they release those new lands that people are arguing about their names again. And so I'm hoping that maybe a three-color deck is possible, and I'd kind of like to play Grixis Control, so we'll see.
I second that. I would love to play Grixis Control. I think the Rally decks will survive without Rally. Like, I think they're just going to be different. I think they're still going to be, like, Sac Shenanigans and all kinds of other bullshit, because there will just be things in Innistrad that will help with that. But it'll just be Rally Light
with no. And they Rally. Still have Coco.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, Bant Coco could still be a thing. You could still just be an Aristocrats type deal where you're just sort of sacrificing and getting value.
Yeah.
Zulaport Cutthroat is still a thing. Mm-hmm. I like the... So here's the issue that I have with Ramp. I want Ramp to be good. You know, when we were going to GP Oakland and I was trying to pick a deck, I started off with Ramp, and I really enjoyed Ramp. And, you know, my idea of a good Ramp time is not really what people are playing. Like, when I first started playing Ramp, I was really attracted to the idea of just ignoring my opponent and ramping into things. Like Tron does. You know, Tron doesn't really interact very much. It's just sort of get your mana together and make a fatty in a short amount of time. And the list that I'm seeing now, it's like there's Mana Dorks, there's Sylvan Advocate, there's things. And I'm just like, you know, that's just not the swell time that I had in mind. And so I just don't like every red-green ramp list that I've seen. And so I do think the deck will survive, but I'm just not really a fan of it right now. I do like the Grixis Control deck. I also think that Esper Control might still exist because we are losing Crackling Doom, which is the card that I will not miss at all. But Crackling Doom. I've had so many bad experiences with it, and I'm really happy to see that go. And so without that, you know, there is Self-Inflicted Wound, but we are able to activate a Shambling Vent in response and sacrifice the Shambling Vent, so we have options. You know, and I just feel like that card really kept the deck down, and we still have a lot of the dragon cards, so I'm hoping that either Grixis Control turns into more of a thing, or Esper Control can regain some of that spotlight, but that's just really what I would like to see happen. Forbes magazine published an article on their website called From Magic the Gathering, Diversity is the Marketing Strategy. And they interviewed some fine folks while they were at GPDC. Christine Sprinkle was one of them. Megan and Aria from Magic the Amateuring. Elantris, who was their teammate. A young man named Hugh McMullen, who is the director of communications for Wizards. And they were talking about how, you know, Wizards is openly saying this is our strategy, that we are committed to making the game better for everybody. And sort of detailing how they're doing that. Chris, did you have a chance to read the article? What did you think about it?
I thought it was good. I thought it was very well presented, and I thought that it showed, obviously, Magic and women in Magic in you know, varying areas, which I thought was cool. And I like how it ended with a note of, we've been here, we're still here, we're not going anywhere. You know, this is just kind of like commonplace now. Women in Magic is not an unheard of thing. And I think that that's a really awesome thing to point out.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see that a mainstream media outlet like Forbes is representing the game in that way. Because I think a lot of people from outside the game who haven't played Magic or haven't played Magic recently will probably still see it as a very closed-off, male-dominated space. And it's really great to sort of get that message out there that, no, the tides are changing. And Wizards as a company is actually doing its part to speed that along.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about it, was that it was like, we've seen Wizards kind of taking steps to be more inclusive in the past couple years, but to have it stated, like, this is their marketing strategy, I thought was really powerful. And I was really glad that they brought in somebody like Therese Nielsen, because I think a lot of time artwork, it doesn't really get brought up a ton, you know, especially on our podcast, because none of us are really, like, Vorthos, but it was nice to hear her take on it, where she was like, they'd give you a card name and that was it. And now I can do a picture of a black woman and have it be like perfectly okay. And I thought it was just the people that they pulled in, you know, players, artists, and cosplayers really got like a good round view of the, you know, the diversity in Magic that's increasing.
More importantly, they're actually telling the artists they specifically want a black man or a black woman in the art, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said before, it was like you would get a line saying, give us something evil. And it's like, well, okay. And then, mm-hmm. and now they're specifically saying, we want a black woman to do this. We want an Asian American or an Asian woman to do this, you know. And I think that's really cool. I agree with you guys. I really like the way that they're kind of owning this strategy, because sometimes you'll see people do things that, you know, are good for equality or are good for diversity, but they hesitate to use those buzzwords. Mm-hmm. So they'll be like, oh, it was just a natural evolution of the film. And it's like, no, you want more women to watch. And you can say that. It's okay. But, you know, it's still, you know, they are kind of afraid of that backlash. They are kind of afraid of using those words because sometimes they do have a negative connotation on them. Not by us, obviously, but, you know, like some people still say social justice warrior in a bad way. And people want to avoid using those words if they can possibly help it. And, you know, to see Magic say this is not a fluke. We are actively interested in improving the audience, you know, so everybody can play. That was a really cool thing. You know, even if you're not down with the cause, you know, you can't deny that this is just good business. You know, you can't deny that, you know, if you have a card game or you have anything that generates revenue, you want everyone's money, you know. Yeah. And you can't deny that these things, I mean, look at Star Wars, for example. You can't tell me that part of that success didn't come from the fact that Rey was an amazing female character.
Absolutely.
I was at C2E2 this past weekend, which is a comic book convention, and Rey was probably the most popular female cosplay that I saw of all ages. I saw a young girl as young as 4 dressed as Rey. And you can't tell me that that wasn't good marketing, that that wasn't a good move. Same thing with Mad Max. You saw a few wrote Furiosa. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a character that had a disability, you had a character who was strong female, and you can't, and that I think contributed to that success. And so there's money to be made here. And so even if you're not about doing the right thing, you're still in it for, you're still a business. And I really appreciate Wizards saying that this isn't a fluke, this is an active thing.
Yeah, I know Wizards has been owning it for at least a year and a half now, if not longer. Mm-hmm. I remember when I went to PAX Prime just before Cons came out and they were doing the Cons world building panel, there was a question about, you know, the female Cons. I remember I tweeted about this way back when. Someone asked the Wizards panelists, you know, all these characters are female, is this a coincidence? And they said, no, we intentionally wanted 3 out of 5 of these main characters to be female because we see women being shut out in a lot of other areas in the industry, and we want to say, hey, you're welcome here. And I thought that was a really great move on their part. But again, this was a panel that was attended by Magic players, that was mostly watched by Magic players, i.e. people who are already invested in the company and invested in the game. And to see this broadcast on such a large medium like Forbes that is read by so many non-Magic players is really great for the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I also appreciated the way that after GP Detroit happened, to see how many women were involved with the big reveal. You know, you had Allison Lures, and I think somebody made a post and said there were so many women that made this happen, and to see them giving a shout out to them and saying, you all did really great, and to say, you know, I'm really proud to work for a company that, you know, does this and owns that it's happening, you know. And this person, I think, didn't work for Wizards. I think they were just involved with there were many factors that worked to get the reveal to happen, and I think he worked for one of the other companies. But, you know, again, like you said, Hallie, it was great to see an outside source say Wizards is doing something really, really big here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Speaking of really big things, we were given the opportunity to participate in the Streamer Showdown, courtesy of Wizards of the Coast. Very big deal, very huge opportunity for us. For those who don't know, Streamer Showdowns are a thing where they invite popular streamers and personalities to participate in flashback drafts or participate in pre-releases. Sometimes you get to try a set out in advance, and then they promote you. And there are some people that will put all the streams together so you can watch them at one time. You get to play against famous personalities like LSV, Kenji, Gabby, the MTA Girls, Elantris, Doc, and we were invited to participate. It was our her first time. Hallie, what'd you think about this?
I thought it was really fun. I had a blast. I had never drafted Ravnica before, but I had so much fun just, like, figuring out the draft format and playing with you guys.
Yeah. Katie, what'd you think? Just seeing all the people in our chat. We had, like, 30, 40, 50 people.
Yeah.
Wizards is plugging us. Like, we have everybody's attention. Like, what was that like?
I really liked the conversation with the chat. Like, something that I've seen, you know, come up on my stream is just, like, the conversation will die, and then it's like, okay, what do I talk about now? But we never had, you know, a dull moment. We had a lot of people that were, like, involved, and, you know, what about this card? What about this card? I really liked Ravnica. I guess it's a new week now. No, not till Wednesday. So I might have to draft it before it goes on to the next one. But I really liked our deck. Our deck was sweet. For anybody who missed it, we had doubling season, a bunch of token makers, and just a lot of good green and white cards. And it was really fun to just play against other people. I mean, I'm sure people were just hopping in and out of the different Twitch streams. And unfortunately, LSV had a bunch of internet problems, but we can still say that we're 100% against him.
Yep.
But no, it was a good time. I really, really enjoyed myself.
Chris, what did you enjoy about the whole thing?
I liked seeing people come into the chat that had never heard of our podcast before and were kind of like, what's this all about? Like, who are you and what are you into? And I thought that was really nice because it's going to get us some more exposure and maybe have us shine some different perspectives to people that may not know what we're all about. I liked just having people in the chat that we knew and congratulating us on, you know, having the Streamer Showdown, you know, participation thing going on, and just being able to feel like you were just like hanging out with like a bunch of friends or something. That was really, really nice. And it was cool to play with Ravnica cards because when I would dip in and out of Magic, I would always end up coming back during like some set, and I like remember like picking up like Dissension cards, and so I got to play with some of my old faves, and that was a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun hanging out with you guys. I really just appreciated how positive the whole thing was, like from top to bottom. Like every opponent we had was cool, you know, obviously they were cool, you know. I didn't think LSV was going to take off his earrings or anything, but you know. So LSV was cool. The young man we played in the middle, was it Paul or Derek?
Paul Pyers.
Paul Pyers. Okay, so he was lovely. Gabby, of course, queen. She was lovely. We ended up going 2-1. You know, all of our opponents were great. Chat was really positive. I only had to time out one person, and after he'd been timed out or they'd been timed out, they stopped saying anything hateful. You know, chat was completely cool, and they were constructive. You know, if there were parts of the stream they couldn't see, it wasn't like, oh, this stream sucks, I'm leaving. It was, could you please shift your screen to the right? Could you please adjust your size so I can see the text on these cards? And thanking us after we made those changes, you know, right, they were willing to work with us on that. And even the suggestions they made, it wasn't like, this deck sucks, why did you take this card? It was, you know, I think this card might be better. That card works too. You know, there wasn't that pressure to, you know, we didn't feel like we were making bad choices, and people were really patient and just really lovely. All the love that we got from Twitter was great. It was just positive from top to bottom, and I really didn't know what to expect, and I wasn't let down at all in that regard.
Yeah, it was great. I am excited to do it again in April.
Yeah, we're going to be participating in the Shadows of Innistrad one, and we definitely had some people tell Wizards that they wanted to see us back, so hopefully that won't be, hopefully this will be a thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you mentioned it earlier, and I didn't capitalize on this. What are you guys calling the new Shadows Lands?
Shadows Lands? I don't know. Was there a nickname for the Lorwyn lands? Because these lands seem incredibly similar, and I feel like if they have a nickname, they should have a similar one.
Do you mean the ones like Twilight Mire?
No, those were, I don't remember what those were. I think those were from like Eventide and Shadowmoor.
Okay.
The in Lorwyn, there was a cycle of lands, because Lorwyn was a tribal set. There was a cycle of, I think they were, I can't remember if they were ally color or enemy color or what they were, but you you had to reveal a creature of a certain type, and if you revealed a creature of that type, the land came into play untapped.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw one. I think Merfolk tried it for some Merfolk decks run them. It's like a blue-white land.
Yeah.
And then there's an elf one that's black and green. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a fairy one and a merfolk one and an elf one and a goblin one. And all the tribes in Lorwyn have one.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure what that name was. But I know some people have talked about the Shadowlands as being peak lands. Some people have called them hand lands. Some people are going back to Tango and saying, oh, well, you need two to make this work. This is great.
No.
No. I've been calling them Sparts lands because if you're like Gabby and just don't give a crap, because Gabby was just like, are we doing this again? And I was like, let's just call them Sparts lands. Like, that's the way of saying you don't care. So if we can make Sparts lands of things, that'll be cool. But I really don't feel the need to. I'm happy with just Shadowlands.
I yeah. like hand lands.
You like hand lands.
Yeah, okay. But I don't feel like I'll enunciate it, you know, the whole way through the set. So it'll probably just be like hand lands, like, like a roll off your tongue more. With no,
you're gonna be like, "What does she want?"
Yeah, that'll be me.
Our listener question this week: be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And this week's question is from our friend Raur Marnie, who supported us in the Twitch chat. He's been a big fan of the show, and he even offered us the opportunity to register some domains if we want to. So he's really, really lovely. You can find him at Raur Marnie on Twitter. And he sent us a question, and I'm just going to kind of read the excerpt that was the question. So he asks us, what should the next big step be for the Magic community? There's been a lot of talk of incremental change, like the number of women at tournaments increasing, diversity increasing in Magic lore, more women doing coverage, but is there a wall out there or a barrier that still needs to be smashed? If we could warp reality to make the community better, what should be done? I'm just trying to get past the small improvements and eliminate any blind spots in my own view as to how we can make things better. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
This is a tough question to answer because we all do have blind spots. We all have, you know, certain things that impact us that may impact other, and, you know, there are things that impact other people that may not impact us, so we're not really aware of them. So I guess you'll have to, I guess, take the responses we have with a grain of salt. But as far as I see it, like we said, Wizards is doing a really great job of promoting diversity and specifically promoting women, you know, in the company. There have been a lot more women in coverage at the beginning of this year, which is great and something that, you know, it looks like is going to continue. And we are seeing more women at tournaments. We're seeing more women doing well at tournaments, which is also great. I still think that the majority of the problems in the Magic community lie at the local level, at the local store level, because most of the bad things we hear, you know, when we get feedback from listeners, our listeners tell us that, you know, oh, this store isn't very accepting, or oh, I don't feel comfortable going to this store, what can I do? And I think if there were some kind of an effort to, you know, regulate things at the store level, I don't know how this would be done because stores are all autonomous, but if there were a way to cut down on those incidents of harassment and inequality at the store level, I think the community would be a much better place.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're seeing a big push for women, which, I mean, is great. But I think all of the other minorities will need to follow next. We don't have a widespread of diversity at my game store, but I would like to see, you know, like, all age ranges, you know, all races, all genders or not genders, kind of as the next stepping stone. Because, you know, I think women getting into Magic can kind of pave the way for these other minorities as well. But like at our store, we're a big college town, so most of our players are college age kids, and I think sometimes it's hard, you know, as a younger player or as an older player to come into a very like early 20s centric store, because I mean, I don't relate to kids, but I do relate to like an older generation, I think. And so I try and, you know, make it inclusive for them because they don't sometimes know all the lingo or whatever it is. And I think it's easy for them, you know, as an older generation to just not feel as welcome. And so I just think that including all of the minorities will kind of be the next big stepping stone, as well as hygiene. I mean, it's something we've been talking about for a long time now, but, you know, at some point, I think that there will be a push for everybody to just be a little nicer dressed and smell nice. And, you know, we're seeing a big push in the bathroom department as, you know, being inclusive for all genders and, you know, having properly working bathrooms for women and everyone. And so I think hygiene and the other minorities will be the next big push in magic.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with Hallie in that I certainly might miss something in what I'm about to say, but I definitely agree with opening up the game to other cultures and other communities, like African Americans. Age is a thing. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've seen little children come into F&M and just look terrified because there's nothing but big kids there. And me having a weakness for children, I'm just like, oh, come here. I just want to like hold them and hug them and not creep out their parents. But, you know, I really want to let these kids in, and I want kids to enjoy the game, and I want people of all ethnic backgrounds to enjoy the game. I think the next challenge for us is maintaining. You know, we go through this every once in a while where like we see a woman do well, we see several women do well, and then they don't. And I understand it's the variance of the game, so I'm not saying it's their fault necessarily, but keeping up this inertia that we have going, keeping up this trend that we have. We had Gabby doing coverage, we had Jackie do coverage, we've had Atlantis do coverage. Keeping that up, you know, not having this just be a fluke, not having this be a one-time thing to kind of keep people quiet or to say, okay, fine, we gave you a woman in coverage, you got it now. No, this should be a thing. This needs to be a thing going forward. You know, we're seeing more women create content now. Emma Handy, Jadeen, you know, having this continue to be a thing. You know, every once in a while, you see this ebb and flow where it's like a couple women will do articles, and then life happens, and then they stop doing them. And then all of a sudden, there's nobody doing any content. And then you see a woman doing coverage, and then for whatever reason, they stop. And so I think just maintaining what we've all built here, you know, keeping the energy going, you know, just continuing to trend upward instead of going downward. And I think that's just kind of what we need to do. And hopefully we'll, you know, just keep rising and really break through that ceiling.
This might sound odd or maybe completely off base, but one thing that I always think about in relation to the magic community is how much I really want it to be a community. And I think that something that could help bring us all together a little better would be if there was some type of magic convention. I know that we have had Vegas in past years and that there are Grand Prix, but I think that something that could maybe benefit magic would be to have an actual convention for all things magic, not just from a competitive stance, not just, you know, with multiple tournaments, but a little something for everyone. There's something for the Vorthosis. There's something for cosplayers. There's something for, you know, the Spikes. There's something for the kitchen table players. And I just think that that would be a really awesome thing to have. One of the best experiences that I have ever had that was non-magic related was when I went to LeakyCon in Chicago. LeakyCon started as a Harry Potter fan convention and has since expanded to include other fandoms. However, going there and being immersed in something where everyone there was there because of Harry Potter, regardless of age, gender, race, anything and everything. And everyone just really hung out together. No one judged anyone. There was, you know, hugs around. It was just a very interesting experience. And there was multiple different things you could do at the convention. There was writing workshops. There were meet and greets with authors that didn't even have anything to do with Harry Potter, but they kind of grew out of all of that. And I think that magic could definitely benefit from something similar to that. I also do agree with the sentiment that local game stores do need to still continue to work on being more inclusive and to not tolerating any kind of bullying or shaming or anything just terrible at their store. You know, you need to be a good representative for your community, and that starts at the base level. So I do think that that is still something that does need to be worked on as well.
Anything else on your minds before we wrap up the show?
Oh, I had something. So, I got a couple of very generous donations on Twitch this last week. And so I was wondering if you guys had any input on what modern deck I should get into, or if I should wait for modern.
I don't know. I saw the results from the mocks this past weekend, and it seems like blue-white control builds were doing quite well, and that they might be... Some people were hypothesizing, Spurling's build in particular, that they might weather, you know, because obviously some bans might be coming down the pipe in April, and some people were saying that not only are they good now, but that they might be good after the Eldrazi bans, whatever they are. So you might want to invest in those cards if you don't already have them.
Nice.
What type of blue-white control?
I think it was just like Restoration Angel, Wall of Omens shenanigans.
Oh, okay. I think I played against something like that at regionals, and it seemed very good.
Yeah, and it did very well. And there were a couple blue-white decks that did well. So I think that might be a good starting point. I do think, I mean, Affinity is always a safe bet, but I'm not really sure if that's your jam, Katie.
I mean, I've actually played it in paper, not in a tournament, but I've tested with it a few times, and I actually kind of enjoy the deck, but I'm not, you know, it's so linear in that it doesn't overlap with any other deck that when you invest in it, you go like whole ham instead of like, oh, I have these cryptic commands. I could play this in a different blue deck. It's like, no, you got Affinity, girl. That's all.
Have you thought about the Blue Moon deck that we played during the Pro Tour Gauntlet?
I do like that deck. I haven't been following Modern lately, so I don't know what's holding up against Eldrazi. I don't think I'll be able to build it before rotation happens, and so I don't know if I'm worried. And by rotation, I mean the ban list. I don't know if I'm worried about it, or, you know, if I should, like, if it's going to still be on the horizon, and maybe I need to account for it. I'm just not sure what I'm feeling yet.
Abzan Company seems like it's pretty safe, if that's your jam. I'm just trying to think of things that we know aren't going anywhere. That's all I've got. What about you guys?
Well, I'm not a huge modern follower either, but Katie, if you are waiting for the BNR announcement, I know before the Eldrazi winter, Grixis Control was kind of making waves in modern with Mom and Pop Nalar and Kolaghan's Command and all our favorite counter spells and removal spells, and that kind of seems like your thing. So if that becomes a thing again, I could definitely see you playing it.
Cool.
Yeah, Grixis is definitely a thing that you could do. I mean, it's still strong, it's still good. I don't really think you would have to wait for the bannings necessarily, because if you're playing something that's, like, not too OP, that no one has really stressed about any bannings for, I think you're pretty safe investing in, you know, maybe multiple different decks that share, like, the same cards. I mean, I know I'm going to start investing in a deck soon. It's a secret. But, yeah. So, it's going to be something.
Cool.
Speaking of investing in decks, I have a confession to make.
Oh. What happened?
I realize some listeners are going to be very disappointed in this, and so I feel like I should get it out here. But last night I was lonely and depressed.
You built Burn?
Not that depressed.
I was worried for the sanity of everyone.
And I had some tickets laying around that I wasn't using. And I purchased some Snapcaster Mages.
Yes! Oh my god, yes. That's what I'm talking about.
I know, I'm supposed to be the Golgari light in the tunnel. I'm sorry.
You can be Sultai. No one's judging.
We're supporting, if anything.
Okay. Yeah.
I just don't know how to use them. So I built them. So I ended up building this Esper gift stack that did well at the Modern Classic at SCG Indianapolis. And it looks like a lot of fun. I picked up some Snapcaster Mages. I also own a couple copies of Mana Leak. Something you kids like to use.
Oh, yeah.
So I have that. I have a couple copies of Path to Exile. I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I'm so used to just eating my graveyard with whatever I do, and it's like, oh, I have a Snapcaster. I have to be aware of what I need to flash back. I can't just delve everything away to a Tassiker. I have to be really careful here. It's really, really hard to pilot. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but I can say that as of yesterday, I do own a playset of Snapcaster Mage, on Magic Online at least.
My face is a huge grin right now.
I'm really proud of you.
It's your fault.
I'm so glad.
It's your fault.
I have never played a Gifts deck, though. Like, I think that deck would be really hard. That's one I've just never really tackled. I'm just like, somebody else can play it.
It is really hard. And the feeling that I have, and I've used this metaphor to describe other decks before, it feels like a Jenga tower where when you play Jenga long enough and, like, there's just the one little block holding the middle together. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it feels. Like, it has a really great top half. So, like, you've got your Path to Exiles, you've got your Serum Visions, you have a lot of things to do in the early game. Then you have, like, your end half, which is, like, Iona, Elesh, Norn, Gifts Ungiven, Unburial Rites. But there's this weird middle ground. And, like, a lot of times, like, there was one game where I actually drew both my Elesh, Norn, and my Iona.
Oh.
And I was like, I need those to be in the graveyard. Like, this is really awkward. And then there were times where I had a really great early game, and I just was flooding. Like, I had no... I didn't see my Wrath of God. I didn't see my Damnation. I didn't see my Gifts Ungiven. And there was just no... There was no tail end, and I feel like a lot. I feel like I'm just drawing the wrong half of it, or I'm seeing the wrong half of it. I just don't feel like it has any sort of middle to help you transition between the two sides, and so that's part of the reason I'm not sure I'm going to stick with it, is that I just don't know, and I don't have enough experience with it, admittedly, but I just feel like getting to the late game is really, really difficult, that there's just no middle ground there.
You could combine, like, the best of both worlds and play Bug.
Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, I do recall Gerard Fabiano doing something along those lines with, like, Thragtusk and Tassiger, and I could see myself doing that.
Yeah, and you get, like, Liliana, and then you also get to play Snapcaster and, like, Tarmogoyf, and...
You just want me to play Snapcaster. You don't care what I do with it, just play Snapcaster.
You found me out.
Speaking of control, there is a standard PPTQ doubleheader at my store on Saturday, where you can do, like, one PPTQ, and if you bomb that one, there's another one later on in the day. And so I'm thinking I might play Esper Dragons because it did do well this past weekend. I may sleeve that thing up and just have one more round of my dig through times and see how that goes. And it's standard, but on the other hand, like I always say, it'll be a good story for the show. So I think I might do that and play in two PPTQs on Saturday.
Shitty or not.
So.
Here we come.
Shitty or not, here we come. That's become our new battle cry. Yeah. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. And you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or at twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg, or by email katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at thkriz. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is CrypticCommandWithCase.
I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/GF Bracket, patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket if you want to support the show. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.